The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Good morning and good afternoon to some of those folks. I guess you're right after lunch, right, Hyde?
It's 12 noon here.
Yeah.
It's right at lunchtime.
I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley, and that was my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Heidi and I welcome you to our show today, and we hope that you'll enjoy our inspirational guests. We're going to be discussing stories of hope, loss, and recovery. And we want to remind you that these shows are brought to you by our foundation, the Open to Hope Foundation, whose mission it is to help you find healing after loss. I want to talk a little bit this morning, Heidi, about our show on CBS last Monday.
Okay, yes. It was a great show. And if anyone's out there listening that's a man or that knows a man in their life or a boy in their life, this is the show for you because it was on men and grief.
Yeah, Tom Golden did a wonderful job. I like that analogy he made, Heidi, about how women grieve and men grieve.
Yes, I did too, because he was saying what, Mom, that women grieve face-to-face.
Right.
And men grieve shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And he talked about hormones and how our hormones change. You know, if you've got a little kid, he still cries. And then when that testosterone starts up, men don't cry like they did anymore.
And he also said some of the best conversations you're going to have about grief and loss are when you're not looking at men. So in the car, golfing, playing sports, fishing, anything that's, you know, shoulder to shoulder.
Absolutely. So we want you to make sure you listen to that on Chat About It. It was on Monday. We're on Chat About It, CBS, on 2 p.m. on Mondays. And you can get reach all our archives from thegriefblog.com. We've got over 200 shows archived on there, and you can listen to them 24/7 and tell people about them. My goodness, Heidi, we're downloading, half a million a year now.
Yeah, exactly. It's great that we're getting the word out there. Please spread the word that we're here. We don't want anyone in the world to feel isolated and alone. All of our links to all of our shows are put on Facebook, so it's very easy to get to the shows through our Open to Hope Foundation Facebook page. If you become a friend of Facebook, you'll be able to link in quickly to the shows.
And we also wanted to remind you that about the Compassionate Friends candle lighting. On December 13th, which is the 2nd December and Sunday, you can join the Compassionate Friends and other people who've had loss all around the world by lighting a candle from 7 to 8, in between 7 to 8 in your area of the world. And if you go to the TCF website, the Compassionate Friends website, you will be able to sign up for the candle lighting and put your child's name there. On December 13th, you'll be able to write something about your child that will be on the website that day. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's really powerful to go on the website on that day, Mom, and to put something in Scott's name and then look at all the tributes to all the children and, you know, siblings that have died in the world and see what people have written. You really don't feel alone when you see that. You realize others have been where you are.
Absolutely. So make sure you put it down on your calendar, December 13th at 7 p.m. If you can join a group, and through the Compassionate Friends, you can find a group that you can join, or you can do it with your own family, or you can do it by yourself. Heidi,
absolutely. And I just want to say one more thing. For those of you that are out there and that feel like you need support or you need counseling, I do grief phone coaching. So you can call me at 646-269-1664. And I will do coaching with you, and I reach people all over the country. So anyone that wants to do that, feel free, please.
That's great, Heidi. You have a website too, right?
I do. It's www.drheidihorsley.com. So you can see how I work and how I work with you. And please reach out if you're feeling alone or if you feel like somebody else is alone. Reach out and call me or go to my website.
Also, we want to talk about Thanksgiving today, right, Heidi?
Yes, because it's, what, next week?
Yeah,
next Thursday. I can't believe it's already next week. I have to think about it. It just crept up on me.
Right. Yeah. Next Thursday. Now, we want to just make a couple of comments about Thanksgiving. You know, I want to say to you right now, you need to take care of yourself on these holidays, but you also need to be courteous and let other family members know. If you feel like you're going to be leaving early and you're not going to be able to make it or whatever, let them know now. And if you, I mean, they may be mad about it, but you know what? That's the way it is. But need to tell them early because shame on you if you wait till the last second.
But, Mom, what about this? I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. What about if you don't know you're going to have to leave early and you get there and you become really overwhelmed at some point with your own grief and you don't want to ruin the day and you feel like, you know, I have to get out of here. I didn't realize this was going to impact me the way it did.
Well, I think that's a good point, Heidi. And if you're feeling fairly fragile right now, wherever you're going for Thanksgiving, I would make an effort to let those people know that you may even leave the dinner table or whatever,
mm-hmm.
so that they know. So that, and you can also use one family member as an advocate.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a family member that you're close to, just give them a call and say, "Could you pave the way for me and let people know?"
Absolutely. And also, if you want to make sure that your child or sibling's name is said, suggest to the group, you know what, before we have dinner, can we do a tribute toast to Scott?
Yeah.
You know, and just to remember and honor him. You know, because sometimes people feel like the group should bring up the person's name, and they never do.
Right.
And
that's
get
another
really
place.
Injured by that.
And that's another place where if you don't feel like you can say it, tell another family member to do it.
I like that idea, Mom.
And tell them in advance if you need that. And sometimes, like if you're going to a friend's house that you don't know very well and you don't feel like you can do that, get your little group together or light a candle yourself before you go and have your own little ceremony before you go if you feel like, because it just feels uncomfortable kind of to enjoy yourself or to, you know, have these experiences. But how do you talk a little bit about the kids and the fairness of having them have a good time too though?
Well, you know, you all know that as children love holidays, and they so look forward to Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter and all these holidays, and they want there to be joy and happiness in the room, and they want to have these celebrations. So we have to be careful that we also honor our surviving children, not just our children that have died, and pay tribute to the ones that are surviving as well, because they've been through a lot, and they actually deserve to have some positive memories, you know, coming going forward. That doesn't mean you can't pay tribute to the people that have died, but also embrace those that are living and say, you know what, I'm gonna pay tribute, and then I'm gonna move forward and make the best of this day for my other children.
Yeah, and you may have to go somewhere that you wouldn't want to go, if you weren't doing it for the kids. So,
right,
and remember, and it's only one day.
Absolutely. And one more quick thing, and then we'll go forward. But my mom and I were talking earlier about, right now you're all about to go to the store and buy groceries and shop for that day, many of you. And that's really hard, too. I mean, I know Scott ate all the girls, all of us. He ate so much. And he had certain foods that he liked. And shopping is a whole other experience that can trigger very sad memories.
That's right. So don't let it sneak up on you. Know that it's going to happen. And, you know, you can either bake the pies or buy them this year or have somebody else do that. Or, you know, try to take care of yourself and try not to get too tired, because tiredness can create all sorts of problems. So, Heidi, you want to, and we wish you luck on Thanksgiving. And we'll be recording on Thanksgiving Day. It's going to be a great show. We're going to have Harriet Hudson. We're going to have Harriet Hudson on. She's written a lot of books. She's a great woman, and she's going to be on Thanksgiving Day. And we just want to remind you that we have other Thanksgiving shows that you can go back and look at if you want to.
Yes, Joy Johnson from Centering Corp did a wonderful show last year. If you're feeling like you need support on Thanksgiving Day, try to step away and get to your internet and tune into our show.
Right, or tune into some of those past shows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Heidi, do you want to introduce our guest today? We've got a great guest.
Sure, I'd love to. Our first guest today is going to be Megan Prescott, and we're going to talk today about helping children deal with loss. Megan Prescott lost her mother and brother within a month of each other at age 19. The daughter of a high school English teacher, Megan used writing and drawing for the next 20 years to express her feelings about losing her family. She is the author of Squirrel and Oak, A Story of Hope. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Really great to be here. Hi.
Hi, Megan. It's great to have you on from Texas.
Yes.
That's great. Well, Megan, you're one of our authors, too.
Yes, a new author.
Yeah, so you can go to the Open to Hope site and read some of Megan's work. Well, Megan, gosh, you lost your mother and your brother within a month of each other at age 19. How did that happen?
Well, my mother was diagnosed with a very aggressive form of leukemia, and I died within 8 months of her diagnosis, and 3 weeks later, my brother was killed in a car accident.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Awful,
yeah.
Megan. Yeah. So it, of course, changed the course of my life, and one of the on my website, I posted some of my pictures. We were talking earlier about it. I realized early on I kind of had a knack for taking how I felt about those situations and making them into visual images. And it just started really randomly in a visual journal that I kept. Mm-hmm. And
now, did you have any special teacher? Your mom was
No, my mom was a high school English teacher, so I loved writing. But my hobby was drawing. I just enjoyed to do it.
And, you know, Megan, I've noticed when working with teens, drawing and journaling is very therapeutic for them.
Very much so. It's one of the few places where you can really be free and not have someone over your shoulder telling you how to do something. Because some of my early images are quite intense, because there's intense emotions that, of course, accompany grief and sudden loss. And I didn't have therapy, but I drew, and it ended up being my therapy quite by coincidence. It was just one of those funny things that happened. And here I am 20 years later drawing very different images and painting more inspiring pictures, but it was definitely a process.
Which shows how your grief has progressed over the years and how it's changed.
Exactly. I didn't know that I was documenting a bereavement process. I had no idea. I just knew that, and now looking back, that the images change as my heart changed.
Now, initially, did you share your images with people, or were they something that you just kept...
No.
Yourself.
Oh, no, no. And even now, it's just been very recently that I've had the trust to show them to other people because they're so personal and intense. Because, again, the emotions are so intense.
I was just thinking, Megan, that would make a wonderful book, A Journey Through Grief.
Yeah,
with an image.
I love that idea.
It'd be,
you know, that's in the back of my head. I'm planning my first real gallery show, working with a grief center here in Austin called My Healing Place, and they would like to have a gallery show with that exact idea in mind, that there's a process that can be seen visually.
That's amazing. We're going to have to go to break right now. When we come back from break, I want to talk to you, Megan, about the process of making your wonderful book and The Squirrel and the Oak, A Story of Hope, and how people can get that, and also about what you would recommend to parents out there who have kids that are grieving right now as far as getting them into the arts. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. We're talking today about helping children deal with loss with Megan Prescott. You can reach us through the Grief Blog as well as the Open to Hope Foundation. All shows can be downloaded on iTunes. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you lost a loved one and are wondering where to turn? Feeling overwhelmed by your grief? Join the thousands of people who have found hope and comfort as a part of the Open to Hope online community. It's free, it's safe, it will lighten your burden. Just type in opentohope.com and join our circle of support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
If you have grief and feel stuck, it's time for you to open to hope by listening twice weekly to the Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley shows. You can hear them on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time and 9 a.m. Pacific Time at voiceamericahealth.com and on CBS Chat About It at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time at chataboutit.com. Can't make the live broadcast? Listen to the archives or download the podcasts to over 200 shows featuring experts in the field of grief, loss, hope, and recovery by going to thegriefblog.com. Their shows are inspirational and supportive, healing the grieving heart. Remember, you need not walk alone.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking about helping children deal with loss with our first guest, Megan Prescott, author of Squirrel and Oak, A Story of Hope. Welcome back, Megan and Gloria.
Yay.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Heidi, I'm just sitting here looking at Megan's book, and on the screen of my computer, the pictures are so beautiful. You're going to love looking at the pictures of the book on the web. It's fabulous, as well as it's going to make you want to get her book, The Squirrel.
And Mom, I love the way, you know, my mom and I read the book to each other before the show again, and I love the way it reads because it's very poetic. Also, and I love the storyline, and we'll talk more about how you kind of talk about continuing bonds throughout the book, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And before we do that, Heidi, you had a question you wanted to ask her.
I did. I'm just so struck, and I can't get it out of my head, Megan, and I know our listeners, most of them can't either, by the fact that you lost your mother and your brother within a 3-week period. That is so overwhelming when I hear that, and I'm just wondering, how did you survive that?
That's a really good question. I think I survived it with a strange, crazy hope that I always somehow was placed inside of me young, that I wasn't going to let something so sad be the end of me, you know,
okay.
And that's how Squirrel and Oak came about, you know, 22 years later, is this, when you lose a person in your life, there's a strange guidance that takes over. I mean, it's this otherworldly existence, as you know, that kind of starts to happen, and it's a transformation, and I felt like I was never left without some sort of guiding light through it all, even though they were the darkest days, those first few years, you know, following. I think I stayed in that shock stage for a few years.
That's interesting, for the first few years, and I think it's important for our audience to hear that out there. She's not saying the first 2 days,
no.
The first 2 weeks, and the world thinks that we're supposed to, you know, it's been a month, my goodness.
Oh, heck, it's been a year. People will say it's been a whole year, or it's even been 2 years, and that's a really big message I would like to send out. Everybody has their own time, and the grief take it. It's a transformational process that's a forever thing. It's for the rest of your life you change.
The story, it's not a hopeless change.
Not at all. In fact, you tend to because you go into such a dark place after the loss, there's nowhere else to go but the light. That's a huge symbol for me as an artist and as a person, is that I always thought anything that feels light or has a quality of light is probably the right direction because I felt so dark. In Squirrel and Oak, that's part of one of the themes is that the squirrel goes through basically the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross grief steps, and there's a place where she's very, very dark and asking all these questions. And
And she was living in the oak tree, and the oak tree dies. Right?
Exactly.
Which I thought was so symbolic, because you are living within this family.
Exactly.
This family, and then the family you knew basically dies when this happens.
And
a new
I like
family
how,
does.
With that in mind, Mom, that the oak tree says, look, I have roots, I'm not going to leave.
Right.
And the squirrel believes that this tree will never leave the squirrel, but yet the tree leaves.
Yes. Quite abruptly, the squirrel, the tree leaves, and that's part of it too. Because death is shocking, and if you can make it through that shock, there is hope. There is light. Just follow the light. Follow your heart. That was a big theme through the book. Is we can't see these people that we love anymore. We can't see them with our physical eyes. We actually do have to feel them with our hearts. They're, you know. That's a very different way of perceiving our loved ones.
I love the very last page, and it talks about, you know, they are alive inside of our hearts forever, and I love that heart. And then that saying on the very last page, it's so beautiful. It's such a great way to end the book.
Thank you. I really wanted something that could walk with a child through the grief process from beginning to end, and that there is hope on the other side. It is a process and a journey, and you're not alone in that journey, because grief can feel very tricky. You feel quite isolated, and the minute you reach out, you hear other people's stories, and it makes you feel less alone, and that's what we all need.
Well, and I like this book because often when you talk to children about death using people, it's scary and children shut down, but when you're talking about death using the death of a tree and a squirrel and their relationship, I think staying in that metaphor, kids are a lot more likely to open up and talk. And so for those of you listening, if you have children out there and you want to kind of open up the communication around loss, please get this book, because this book will do it.
Thank you, Heidi, because that's you hit it right on the head. I really wanted something that children could, you know, physically hold on to. It's a book, but it's a story about someone else, about a squirrel. It's not them personally. They can be a little bit removed from the process, and yet at the same time very much identify with the character.
Now talk about the art program that you've got to go with it.
Well, I've developed a supplementary art program because I'm an art teacher. I just couldn't not have an art portion to the book. And basically I use the heart template, and I teach how to make light as an artist. There's, you know, art techniques to create light, and I thought what would be a nice reminder of the experience. The children go home with a picture of light in their heart. Highly symbolic, doesn't necessarily focus on the darker parts of grief, but it focuses on the light part. So we talk about our hearts a lot, and there's a line in the book, it's something like, now my heart feels what my eyes cannot see. And as I said before, when we lose someone, we can't see them anymore, but it doesn't mean we can't connect with our hearts to them. And so I really wanted to focus on the feeling part instead of the thinking part.
Now I wanted to ask you, did you have other siblings?
I have an older brother.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Is he connected with you through all this?
No. No. Mm. We talk for holidays, but he was a little older than I am, and for some reason we grieved very differently. And so no, that was what Heidi mentioned earlier. When I lost my mother and brother, the family system broke down. It was a breaking up of the family. Mm. And I felt a bit like a lone wolf since this experience. And
Well, it was interesting hearing Tom Golden on Monday talk about how different boys and girls and men and women grieve.
Definitely.
you know, and women tend to reach out to others and want these connections through talking and verbalizing, and men are doers, and it was just interesting hearing the difference.
Yes, and he was a little older and married and had a family, and I was still a teenager, so kind of at different places in our life, and that's important, too. You know.
And you were probably there for your dad, too, I would assume.
Well, that's it. I definitely turned to take care of my father.
That's a sibling
a whole
thing,
other
right,
story.
Heidi?
But he suffered from mental illness. So after the loss of my mother and brother, it just was a roller coaster for him emotionally. And so I kind of became a bit of a parent as well as a lost child at the same time.
So Megan, when people out there, when parents out there worry that their teenager's life is going to be destroyed because they've had the death of a sibling or the death of a parent, what would you say to those parents that are listening about that statement? My teen's life is going to be destroyed.
It is not going to be destroyed. It is I believe that those will be the seeds to a future success of somehow. I do believe that things somehow happen for a reason to lead us to something we would have never dreamed of. For I've often thought, had my mother not passed away, I would never have left the Northeast, for example. I grew up in Vermont, and all of my family and friends are there. But when I lost my family unit, I ended up embarking on this whole other life I could have never imagined. Is it better, worse? I don't know about that. It's just what it is. So let grief and lead you to hope, and that hope, it leads you to seeds you'll never imagine, a life that you'll never imagine.
Wow, Linda, that's wonderful. Megan. That is wonderful. And on that note, we're going to have to close the show. And give us your website again for everyone.
Absolutely. It's www.artbymap.com, M-A-P, my initials. And you can also find it at Google Squirrel and Oak, the book.
That's great. And we would highly recommend it, wouldn't we, Hayden?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fabulous book, and I think your kids will really, really, it's a story of hope, and I think your kids will resonate with it. It's wonderful. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
You too, and you're a real inspiration. Have a great day.
Thank you.
It's time for us to go to break now. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. Please stay tuned to hear more about helping children deal with loss with our next guest, Linda Goldman.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This podcast is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, which also offers you a free monthly e-newsletter containing current articles, book and movie reviews, as well as podcast schedules. Just go to opentohope.com, click on newsletter, and receive your monthly newsletter filled with hope and support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Hello, this is Dr. Heidi Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. Have you lost meaning and purpose in your life since your loved one died? Does each day feel like an effort? You do not have to go through this difficult time alone. As a bereaved sibling and licensed psychologist with over 15 years' experience, I will work with you in a collaborative, supportive way. If you live in the New York tri-state area, you can contact me at 917-338-6396 or email me at drheidihorsley@gmail.com. That's drheidihorsley@gmail.com. To learn more about my private practice, visit my website at www.drheidihorsley.com. Thank you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi, and I'm here with my mom, Dr. Gloria, And we are going to be joined on this segment by our second guest, Linda Goldman. And we're going to be talking again about helping children deal with loss. Linda Goldman has degrees in counseling and early childhood education. The stillbirth of her daughter, Jennifer, 26 years ago, has greatly influenced her work with those who have suffered loss. She is the author of Great Answers to Difficult Questions About Death, What Children Need to Know. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on, Linda.
Yeah.
Heidi was reading, you know, the name of the book we're looking at right now, Great Answers and Difficult Questions to Death, but my goodness, your prolific life and loss, breaking the silence, raising children to be resilient. Children also grieve. Wow. Now, was this really a lot result of your stillbirth child?
Actually, yes, it was. I had always worked with children and losses as a teacher and a counselor in the school system for almost 20 years. And then I had my stillborn baby, Jennifer. And, of course, it was a very deep and one of those losses that are not always acknowledged. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer's death led me to take a real look.
Was she full term?
She was full term.
Wow. And she died at delivery?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, I got to hold her and be with her.
And you just didn't hear the baby cry?
No.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really tough.
I know there's so many people out there that are identifying with this and saying, wow.
Well, actually, she had died before the birth. Mm-hmm. And then I had to go through 2 days of labor.
Oh, that's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
And but I felt very fortunate that I got to hold her and be with her. And this is sort of off of the question, but then I kept saying to my husband, I wish I had a picture of Jennifer. People are going to think that that's crazy, but I really do. And then 3 weeks later, a kind nurse left a photograph of Jennifer on my car.
Oh my gosh!
And I took it to a photographer, and I had it made very soft. And it's a very treasured picture because besides holding her and being with her for that time, it just means so much to me. And I know this is off the question and I will answer it, but I can't say how meaningful those kinds of things are when you have a prenatal loss.
Mm-hmm.
So Jennifer's death inspired me to work with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And I attended her life day, death and transition workshop in El Rito, New Mexico, and I came back just filled with ideas of how to work with kids with grief and loss and death issues. And that was the seed point for my career, not only as a grief therapist working with children, adolescents, and adults, and women with prenatal loss and men as well, but also just my deep wanting to take everything I can learn from my clients and then give it back in some way through teaching and writing.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you've done so many wonderful books, and it's kind of an amazing thing. You know, I just know our audience out there, people who are newly bereaved, one thing Heidi and I love about this show is talking to people like you who have made, you know, show that life goes on, and in big ways, huh?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I feel like sometimes my work in the world is to hold that sacred space where people can grieve, where I think Megan was mentioning the dark side of grief, and I would say the deep side of grief that can go from the deepest sadness and loneliness to the greatest joy. I mean, grieving people can still laugh, and it's okay. But I feel like I can hold the space to say, as long as it takes you, I'm going to be with you. But here I am, and I came through, and you can too.
Well, and that's such a wonderful gift to give people. As long as it takes you, I will be here for you. So few people hear that.
Yeah. I think the greatest gift, intervention that we can give grieving human beings is to allow them to tell their story, every piece of their story, every part of their story, as many times as they need to.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about that in connection with kids, because I know you talk about these great answers to difficult questions.
Yeah, that's my newest book, and the reason why I did that is really for parents more than any other group. My other books are for parents and professionals, but so often I hear, my child asked me this question and I don't know what to say. And so I thought how nice it would be not to have the exact words to use, but a model to give words to use so that we can open up dialogue with our children. We can help them to grieve. We can be there.
And one of the things that you talk about in the book, I love the book. It's got these talks about the ages of children. And give a quick rundown on the difference between a child before the age of, what, nine,
sure,
seven or eight, and then one after.
Sure. Well, not to get too intellectual, but I usually speak about Piaget's theory of cognitive development just on how kids see death at different age groups. And, you know, the pre-language age, it's very young, infants and toddlers. You know, their life is all gone, out of sight, out of mind, but still they can absolutely feel and take in a grief environment and get frustrated by it. And then in the next stage, which you mentioned about up to nine, and that's the pre-operational stage, this is really important when working with young kids because it's marked by several things, causality, egocentricity, and magical thinking, which just means that kids feel responsible, that if a little girl says to her older brother, I hate you, I wish that you were dead, and then the next morning he's killed in an accident, she feels her words created that. The big question for that age group is it my fault? And when I worked with a little girl, she was 5 years old, and her mom died in the Pentagon crash. She said, Linda, it's my fault my mommy died. And I said, why? She said, well, my mommy had a cold, and I didn't make her stay home. Mm. And the other piece for that particular age
group. Well, let me say one thing when stop you there, because I think something that you did that many of us don't do as parents is you ask her a question. You didn't say, oh, you shouldn't feel that way.
Exactly.
You know, that's not the way it is. You said, why?
And
why do you feel that way?
And the reason why I do that is twofold. One is because children's questions are a window to their soul and their inner feelings. And when they ask you a question, it's important to see what's behind it. And only when kids can say that magical thinking and release it, then we can come in with some reality checks about the real reason why their person died.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And then we come up to what the older children that...
There was one it, also in that age group, just quickly, because this is important. Kids think that death is reversible. So that even though Johnny may have gone to the funeral and the cemetery and thinks Grandpa's in heaven, he still might write a letter and expect to get that letter back. So that's the other piece of the young ones.
Right.
But then as we go up in age, in the concrete stage, middle school years, kids are more realistic and curious. And the main question they ask is, I want to know the facts about how my person died. And I'll give you an example. A child this age that I worked with said, Linda, my dad died when I was very young, and I've heard so many different stories. Will you come with me to look it up in the newspaper, only to discover dad had died of suicide? And she said it wasn't her dad's irrational act that caused so much pain, but the way the adults around her handled that act. So that was the age where she was ready to say, I really need to know the facts.
And so pick those facts up. And I know some of the things that you've got a wonderful section in the back where you actually have a checklist for children of some things that they might think about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, ideas like know the facts about the person's death. They may really want to know those facts. And maybe sometimes the parents can't tell them. Do you ever recommend that that the parents get an advocate for their child or anything like that?
Well, oftentimes, especially in complex issues like suicide, murder, hard issues, there may be a very big fear factor. And also, just how do I find the words to use? You know, I often suggest that ultimately, kids have a conscious or unconscious knowing about what happened.
Well, they also hear a lot more than you know.
Yeah, and they hear from the media and friends, and it's very hard to keep a secret. Mm-hmm. So what I try to do is role play with a parent until they become comfortable and provide them with words to use to be able to talk to their child about it. Mm-hmm. And that's age-appropriate dialoguing. So, you know, kids are usually satisfied with a couple sentences. Mm-hmm. And then they might come back and ask a few more questions. But it's really, you know, being prepared to say the unimaginable, and it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Being prepared to say that.
And how is it you talk about? I like the idea of role-playing, and I'm thinking for our listeners out there, if you want to have a dialogue and you're uncomfortable, even role-play with a trusted friend.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I wrote two children's books, and one is called Bart Speaks Out on Suicide, because there were no words to use to talk to young kids on this issue. Mm-hmm. And so I think people need words, and then they're more comfortable.
There's some words that you give in here, and I was just trying to think of what it was, but it's the way you talk about the body. Give me those words when someone...
Often with young children, they need to understand death, and a very simple definition is death is when the body stops working.
Yeah, I really like that.
Like, can you tell me what you can't do if your body doesn't work? You can't play on the computer or soccer, et cetera. And also that usually, people die when they're very, very, very old or very, very, very sick. Or they're so injured that the doctors or nurses can't make their bodies work anymore.
Now, what do you do? Hattie and I have talked about this before, and what about when there's been a loss and the child's lost a parent, like in 9/11, and they're concerned about the other parent?
Well, that's so common. One thing we have to do is recognize that it's a common thought for kids to worry excessively about their health and the health of the surviving parent. And especially with a traumatic event like 9/11. You know, one thing I've done, and this is such a simple thing, it's a reality check. If a child is concerned about their surviving parent, about their health, have them go to the doctor and get a checkup and have the doctor write a note to the child. Dear Amy, your dad had a checkup. He did great. Love, Dr. Tom. And that child would come to my office with that note that just helped reduce their anxiety. Another thing that I do is...
I've got to say, I've loved that idea, and I've never heard it. It's fabulous,
yeah.
Linda.
Thanks. And then another thing that I do, and there's many things we can do, is make a worry box and have a child decorate with what things they worry about, and then write or draw that worry and put it in the box outside of themselves. Begin to take those worries away. They can also make a safe box filled with, like, very comforting objects that they pick, stuffed animals, toys, that they can go to that makes them feel good. So that's another thing that's helpful. One other thing that I do, one little girl had many deaths in her family, and she worried a lot. So I asked her to make a list of her top five worries, and her top worry after her mom died in a car crash was that Dad didn't wear his seatbelt. Mm-hmm. So I said, why don't you write Dad a letter? And she was happy to, and she decorated this letter, wear your belt. Dear Dad, I want you to wear your belt because if you don't, I worry you'll get hurt. Circle yes, no, maybe, sometimes. Please write me on the back. And she made a little pouch. And Dad wrote her back and said, you know, dear Michelle, I'm so happy that you told me about this. I will always wear my seatbelt. I love you, Dad. So for that incident, her worries were reduced.
And having him say that he could do that.
Exactly.
Really amazing. You talk about a memory table, too. I like that idea.
Well, yes. You know, one question kids ask a lot is, will I forget my person? So we use memory work to help them remember. And a memory table is so easy. You can just put a sign up, memory table, in a home, in a school, in a grief support group. And then kids can bring in a picture or a memory where they don't necessarily have to verbalize that. We can also make memory books. And one of my books, Children Also Grieve, is an interactive storybook with my two dogs telling a story about grandfather's death. And it's very beautiful with color pictures. But then it has a memory book where children can write and draw lots of different memories about their person, which they love to do. And it was interesting because I was listening to Megan, and this little storybook also ends with Henry, the dog, saying, you know, grandfather will always be in my heart. So it is a good theme for children.
I notice in here, too, after we comment on this, we're going to have to go to break, but I noticed that you talked about have a locked diary, your feelings and thoughts can be safely stored. I think that's important because of what Megan said. You know, she did all these drawings, but she didn't want anybody to see them. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe families can be a little invasive, too.
Absolutely, and I give every child, young and teenager alike, a locked diary to safely house their feelings. Something else they can do is whisper or shout into a tape recorder to get their feelings out, and then they can erase that if they choose, or they can use it to help share their feelings with others.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that for adults and children.
Yeah, yeah.
That whisper and shout or shout into a tape recorder. That's fabulous.
It helps. And erase it. No one's heard it, you know. Yeah.
Absolutely. Great idea. Well, I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. And when we come back from break, we're going to talk a little bit more with Linda Goldman about helping children deal with loss. You can reach us through our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Open to Hope Foundation site. These shows can also be all downloaded on iTunes. Please stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Whether you are a new or frequent listener to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi's podcasts, the Horsleys value your connection. We invite you to join our Facebook and Twitter circles of support. We'll keep you up to date about Open to Hope Foundation events, new podcasts, and YouTube spots. Just go to Facebook or Twitter and search for Open to Hope. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Hello. I'm Eric Kippel, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry, a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erichippel.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi, and I'm here with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and Linda Goldman, author of Great Answers to Difficult Questions About Death, What Children Need to Know. Welcome back to the show, Linda and Gloria.
Thanks, Hyde. Well, Linda, tell people how to get to your website because it's just got all these wonderful books on it. They're all published by Routledge, is that right?
Routledge and Jessica Kingsley and WPS, three publishers.
Oh, okay. Well, wonderful books. Give them your site.
It's www.childrensgrief, all one word, .net.
That's great. And Linda's agreed to write for the foundation, so you'd be able to see some of her things on the foundation site. It's wonderful.
Yeah,
well, Linda,
I
wanted to ask you, because I know there's some parents out there who already feel like they've blown it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, after Scott died, I was pretty much a wreck. And I don't think I was ever the best parent, you know, especially those, you know, first, I don't know, year or two or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But and maybe I was better than I thought I was. I don't know, but
you definitely were better than you thought you were. I think parents are so hard on themselves.
They are. They are.
I'm
I was
telling
gonna
you,
say
us
that. We're all human.
We know that you guys are doing the best you can. You're going through a lot. We totally understand that.
And the kids get to see you're human. You know, you're human.
Well, they certainly do see it. So, so I've got somebody out there, and they are telling me that, and you know, this is from one of our listeners, that they didn't allow their child to go to the funeral, and they were 7, and now they're 10, and they're angry about it.
The child is angry about it.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, of course, you know, if we had our druthers and we could talk to a lot of people before the funeral, if we can prepare children, invite them, and not force them. and give them choices. It's a good idea to have kids come. And if they want to leave, have a designated person to take them outside and blow bubbles to remember their person. But I also feel like it's never too late. And so if that child is angry that they didn't get to go to the funeral, I would acknowledge that, yes, you know, I can understand why you're angry. And after that, you talk about the anger with that child, let's brainstorm. What do you think you would like to do so we could have a commemoration now, even though you didn't go then? Maybe they'd like to have a little ceremony. Maybe the family could come together and light a candle. Maybe they could bake all the dishes that their person liked that died. But I don't think it's too late. And I think even when the child is 10, they're at an age where if you let that child brainstorm what they'd like to do, they'll come up with some good ideas.
And especially if they take a look at your book, too, because I'm thinking they can do memory tables and all sorts of things.
They could do a memory book together as a family. They could plant, they could go find a beautiful bush and let the child pick it out and plant some bushes in the backyard. And there's many things they can do together. They could make a memory book of pictures together of experiences with their person that died and call it our family book. I also give every child and teen a photograph album, and they get to pick the pictures that they'd like to use and write or dictate a sentence, and then they make a book about their life.
Love it. So Linda, I know you've written a book on resilience in children also, and are these some of the things you could do to increase resilience in children that have had loss, the things that we're talking about, and is there anything else that comes to mind?
Yes, and you know, I think the most important thing we can do is include children as recognized mourners, even though we may be afraid to do it at an age in an age-appropriate way. And if we haven't done it, it's never too late, because we always can begin to include them. When I talk about resilience, this is what I mean. So often people feel that grieving and traumatized children are broken and needing to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to understand that the deeper way we can work with them is to support those natural attributes of resiliency. For example, one girl had someone die at the Twin Towers. She was 6 years old. She drew this beautiful picture of people crying, towers in the background, and angels. And she said, once upon a time, angels were watching, and God knew that everything was okay.
Mm.
So we knew then and there that we could support her spiritual belief system. One girl's dad was killed in Flight 800, and he was a beautiful, wonderful composer. She was a young girl. Now she's a young woman. She has a beautiful operatic voice. We supported her natural resilient attribute of wanting to give back to the community by having her give this concert for hundreds of people singing her father's songs because she wanted everyone to get to know her dad. So I think whatever child you're working with, you can support the resilient attributes that they resonate with. There was a little girl named Megan. She was 7 years old. She became an advocate after 9/11. She wrote President Bush a letter, and she said, I don't know why this happened to you. I get sad, she said. And then she gave him some advice. If you ever feel sad or mad, you should really talk to your parents.
That's good.
I love that.
Well, one of the things that you point out in your book, too, is that we do grieve in different ways through our lifetime, the same loss. It becomes a different
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm. Children re-grieve at different developmental
stages. That's the word I wanted, re-grieve.
Re-grieve at different developmental stages. I can give you an example. A 16-year-old, after his dad was killed at the Twin Towers, said to his mother, I mean, this isn't the right example I wanted to give. It's another 16-year-old. His only experience was remembering when he was 5, playing with dad with cars and trucks. When he was 16 years old and he got his license, guess where he went?
And where?
He drove to the cemetery to visit his dad and share with dad that he got his license. was re-grieving at a different developmental stage.
I love that. I think that for our audience out there, the re-grieving idea is an important one, and I like that word because don't think they haven't gotten over it.
Yeah, I mean, I can say no matter where I talked about children in grief, in America, in China, I get the same question. How long does grief last?
Mm-hmm.
And it's one I really don't like to answer. Because as long as you love someone, there are going to be times when we're all hit with an enormous wave of grief when we least expect it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, continuing bonds with people we want
exactly.
to. We want to remember them. I mean,
we
they're part of the fabric
them.
Of our lives. Then why would we want to forget?
And going through major monumental events in our lives without that person brings up the loss. I mean, graduations and marriages
and babies.
Birth of children.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. And each time it does, where's my mother? She's not mm-hmm. here for me when I had my first baby.
And there's that little pain. But also, I think we forget some of the regrieving is funny. I mean, there'll be little events that'll remind us, and it kind of tugs at our heartstrings, but it also makes us laugh.
And, you know, I can't underscore the point that we can still laugh and grieve.
Mm-hmm.
Like one family, they had a little girl die. There were several children in the family. And after she died, the family decided that every year on her birthday, they were going to go out, and for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, they were going to eat their way through the day with all the foods that she liked. And they really had fun doing that. And so sometimes we can remember in that way.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, thank you so much for being on the show today and for all the work that you've done with children. And everyone should go to your website and take a look at it and also get your books. You've got wonderful books, Children, Grief, childrensgrief.net. And thanks for being on the show, Linda.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda.
Oh, you're welcome.
So it's been great having Linda on the show today, and please stay tuned again next week when we will have Forgotten Markers in the Journey of Grief. It'll be on Thanksgiving Day, and we have a very special guest for you, Harriet Hudson, and we hope if things get too hectic that you can take some private time out for yourself and listen to more of Healing the Grieving Heart. You can listen to our show on Thursdays at 9 Pacific Standard, 12 Eastern. And remember, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley. Linda, thank you so much for offering hope to those who have had loss.
Oh, you are so welcome.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for